And welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. It is still July 1st, 2025, and in the last half hour, I was talking about some of the things that have been happening in June leading up to very recently. I have a few more things I want to tell you about, and one of the things that I would was going to mention here, because I got myself pretty involved with it, so because I live on Broadway. And I've lived on Broadway since 1978, and I know a lot about the reality of Broadway. The emergency vehicles that ride on Broadway, the amount of parking on Broadway, the age and condition of a lot of the people who live in my neighborhood. And I make no bones about it, is that I was definitely in this whole kerfuffle about whether the bicycle safety ordinance should just, or the cycling safety ordinance should go full speed ahead, installing separated bike lanes, even though that would be at the cost of removing a tremendous fraction of the parking on Broadway. And also the regulation of parking off Broadway, because they would put parking meters on some of the side streets to make up for meters that had been lost due to the bike lanes. I think it's a terrible plan what they're pushing through. Broadway has never been a heavy duty cycling thoroughfare, not like some of the other streets in the city. It is also the primary, it's choice route, east-west route for emergency vehicles. Believe me, I've been hearing the sirens for 43 years, and I'm used to them. I think they're fine. Did I say 43? I think it's what, 47. Oh my Lord, I've been here a long time. But I have neighbors who get around using walkers, and I like to pull a car up in front of my house on the weekends, to load and offload, upload things, and even do mundane tasks like washing my car, pulling a hose out in front and doing simple things like that. And to me, if you never mind the safety issues, that's another issue. But the thing is that there is a lot of, it's not just the parking that's being taken away. The curb access really matters to a lot of people. And we had a thing, a meeting, a city council meeting on June 23rd. And a lot of us who were wanting to make some amendments to the cycling safety ordinance to really basically to take Broadway off the list, because it was not on the original list in the first place. We had a large group of people sort of in a little rally out in front. But then the bike safety people use their email list to sort of bring a lot of people in there as well to sort of do what was really a very theatrical production during the public comment period of the meeting. And it was actually a pretty miserable experience, but also a very telling experience. I mean, I actually did some analysis of the people who had been petitioning on either side of this issue. And the people who want to preserve Broadway more or less like it is are on the median, their median age is 25 years older than the young bucks who want to get rid of all the parking so that they can, have their separated bike lanes, even if those bike lanes are empty 95% of the time. I'm sitting there outside the city council chamber with people who are nurses, older people, people with physical handicaps, and then basically watching people sort of coming in with the bike helmets and saying like, throw those people to the wolves. Don't you know we want to have separated bike lanes? And it doesn't seem to matter to them that, in fact, of the three fatalities on bicycles that happened last year, all three of them, 100% of them, happen in separated bike lanes. It doesn't seem to matter at all, because this isn't really about safety. I don't think it was ever about safety. This is about turf. This is about power. And, be perfectly honest, I think there's a fair amount of, and this is not, I don't like to use ism words very often, but I think there's a fair amount of ageism that is involved here as well. Basically, if you're a longtime resident, over a certain age, you don't really count as much as somebody who's got a six-figure salary, who's working out of Kendall Square, who can use that money to sort of push their political clout. So Anyway, in the end, the votes went against us, and I guess none of us were particularly surprised by it. But I will tell you, there are a lot of people up and down Broadway and elsewhere who got really energized by this, who are now very, very resentful of the people who voted against it. And of course, there are people who are going to be thrilled for the people who voted, for basically going full speed ahead for those empty bike lanes, But anyway, so it goes. There was even a follow-up city council order. I think it came out of either Kathy Zuzi or Patty Nolan, who were like the swing votes who basically voted to tell us all to go to hell. And where their idea of a way of accommodating and mitigating the loss here is to add, I mean, they suggested things like, well, we'll make room available for you down in the garage in Kendall Square to store your car. So let's see. So if I come home late one night and there's absolutely no parking available, what am I supposed to do under the Patty Nolan, Kathy Zusi worldview? I'm supposed to drive down to Kendall Square, take my non-existent cell phone because they've never had a cell phone, call an Uber and have the Uber take me home. I mean, I think ultimately what they're really saying is nobody should own cars. And honestly, there are a lot of us who choose to car own cars, who many of us need to own cars. I probably don't absolutely need it, but doing the things that I like to do, I do want it and I choose it and I believe in freedom of choice. And I don't particularly like having city councils lecturing me or anyone else about how we're supposed to give up our cars, especially when most of the people who are saying that have driveways, including those two swing votes, I might add. So anyway, enough on the bikes. I guess you could say it's over and done with, but then again, we'll see what happens. Maybe the municipal election this year will change things a little bit. We'll see. Now, one of the things that came up when, I wrote about this, again, I don't think I'm going to run over to the page right now, but just talk about it a little bit, which is that, there were a lot of people who were saying, like, for example, with either the multifamily housing issue or with the bike issue, whatever, like the Cambridge Bike Safety people come up and they say, well, don't you know there are five or six of the city councils currently who signed our bike pledge, therefore the five ninths or six ninths of the city supports what we are into. That's nonsense. I want to be just inform people who use that logic that we've never had a referendum question about bicycle infrastructure on any ballot in Cambridge ever. And when you're voting for city councilors or school committee members, most voters can use whatever criteria they want. And I'm sure some voters are going to vote for people based purely on one issue, like, are you on the bike slate or not, right? Or were you on the ABC slate or the CCC slate or whatever? But as I've been pointing out to people, a candidate like Sumble Siddiqui was on the bike, listed on the bike slate. But how many people think voted for her based on that? I don't think very many at all. So I don't think you can kind of credit that as a check on your side of the issue to say that when you're saying that the majority of the people in the city support your point of view. We've never put that question. So I wrote a little bit of an essay about that, which is, we like to pride ourselves in the fact that we're the one place, the one, well, maybe not the sole place, but really the only place in the country that continues to use a proportional representation election system with single transferable votes in order to elect our local city council and school committee. But there's an interesting question. We say proportional representation, but it becomes sort of an empty phrase. And what I've often said to people is, well, proportional to what? I mean, is it racially proportional? Is it gender proportional? It's pretty close, actually, on that. Is it proportional to where the distribution of people live in the city, sort of a geographic proportionality? I don't think so. Is it proportional to where people in the city stand on bicycle infrastructure? I'm almost certainly sure it's not, but some people believe it is. I think it is. back in the days when rent control was sort of the primary deciding issue in the city, I think you could fairly say that the composition of the Cambridge City Council was roughly proportional to the support for rent control, because back then, for better or worse, when you voted, a lot of people said, well, are they for rent control or against rent control first? And then they considered other characteristics of the candidates. So that was the one single dominating issue. And so I guess you could say that it was proportional to the sentiments of the city based on rent control. Because it was interesting when it was, after rent control went away in 2003, I believe there's a was a local referendum question on rent control in this majority tenant city, and it lost. It actually lost handily. So maybe that maybe even then during the rent control days, it was not really proportional. So again, you won't find a bigger proponent for single transferable vote proportional representation than me. But I continue to ask myself and others the question, well, proportional to what, really? Let's be serious here. Is it racially proportionate? Actually not. There are, so I don't know what the word even means anymore. It's more of a statistical snapshot of lots of different factors all sort of blended together, and it comes out with a roughly representative body, but I'm not so sure it's really representative. Certainly, when I see some of the actions our local city council has taken, and believe me, this isn't a campaign speech, this is something I've been saying forever. I don't know that they're really listening to the people of the city particularly carefully. Maybe what they're interested in is sort of making a name for themselves by breaking ground on some new policy or what have you. But I don't think anybody's really checking in with the people of the city, at least not with this particular group. I mean, some of them are. There are some city councilors who are remarkably responsive to the electorate, and others really aren't. So I don't know. Makes it kind of raises the question, like, what does it mean to be representative? Is represent is are our representatives actually representative? I'm not really sure about that question anymore. And I think it's certainly true when you go up the levels through the state house and the federal government. Do you really think the United States Congress is a really good cross-sectional representation of America? If so, God help us all. All right. Another thing that I thought I'd mention here, which is something that largely went under my personal radar until I started seeing these email messages flying back and forth over these last few days. Okay, so there's a zoning petition coming out of East Cambridge. So it's a biomed group wants to construct a building. I think is it, maybe I get the address wrong. I 320, I forget. Let's not even try because I'm going to get it wrong. And they've been negotiating in good faith with people in the immediate area, saying, like, okay, if you're going to want to change the zoning to allow this significantly, actually, it's not really significantly larger building, if you think about what's goes on down, Kendall and eastward. But it is adjoining, it's like right across the street from the baseball field, from Ahern Field. Anyway, so they want to change the zoning to allow themselves to do something, and then they offer certain benefits, and then they end up being negotiated primarily with people in the immediate area here. And some people refer to this as contract zoning, which is a concept I don't like. I've never liked it. To me, zoning should be based on principles of urban design and urban planning, and what would be a good in the sense of urban planning, not so much sort of like the result of Monty Hall's "Let's Make a Deal," right? But we have sort of slipped into that mode of contract zoning over the last couple of decades, where everything it seems to be like, let's make a deal. I say, okay, fine. So if that's how we're going to do it, I mean, that's how the Foundry Building came to the city. And as I like to point out, Bob Healy, former city manager Bob Healy, one of the wisest men I've known, when he heard that that this property, substantial property, was being gifted to the city. It is reported, I wasn't there, it was reported that his first words were, "This is going to be a problem." And in the end, to fit out the building, the foundry building, to do what people wanted, it ended up costing a lot more than the gift. But even more significantly, it turned into a battlefield where, I remember Dennis Carlone was saying, we wanted to use it for a certain purpose. Leland Cheung wanted to be for something else. Then candidate Nadeem Mazen, who then became Councillor Mazen, he wanted it for yet another purpose. So in the end, the fact that this windfall came just turned into this little battleground where everybody said, "Oh boy, we don't get the opportunity to, fight each other over putting in our pet projects here." So it turned into a bit of a battle. And in the end, I have no qualms with what the outcome was, but it wasn't cheap. I'm also reminded that during the COVID time, how ARPA funds came in as, this gigantic windfall of pure cash, for, I forget, were those for shovel-ready projects, or was that something else, I think. But immediately, then all the nonprofits and others all just started basically, sort of chomping away, saying, "Oh, we want, like birds in the nest, saying, 'Feed me,' And and then Mayor Siddiqui seemed to have a very strong preference to this so-called Rise Up Cambridge program, which was essentially a local welfare program. And the so it's like, was it something like $22 million of this free money was just allocated to that? And they're still arguing now if there's any way to continue that in leaner times when there's no more federal windfalls coming. But the point I was really trying to make here was that whenever there's a gift, whether it's even if it's a federal grant, no strings attached. I mean, local tax money has strings attached. You can't just hand it out. There are things like the Anti-Aid Amendment that puts some restrictions on it. But if it comes from non-property tax revenue, there's a lot else you can do with it, right? So it turned into a battle, and honestly, I think some echoes of that battle are still playing out. So anyway, all of this to lead up to the fact is that when this contract zoning with which in the end was going to give a very, very large sum of money to the tune of like 20 something million dollars to support the East End House, which is a wonderful, wonderful institution in East Cambridge. And that it maybe even with the possibility that with that amount of money, then rather than rehabbing the building, they could even relocate to not too far away, maybe onto Fulkerson Street one day, and have an absolutely, phenomenal place, right? But then what happens? Inevitably, what happens? People in places like the Cambridge Community Center on Callender Street in the Riverside neighborhood said, "Well, wait a minute. We don't have a big biolab coming in next door, so we don't have the opportunity to get this big windfall here. So are the only organizations that are going to be benefiting from this windfall are the ones who are close to where the big biotech entities are going in? Is that how this works, right?" Well, this issue came up a few years ago, maybe even around the time when the foundry gift was coming in. I think Sam Seidel was one of the people who spoke to it. I think Marjorie Decker was part of the city council in those days. And they came up with this whole idea of this community benefits fund and this mechanism so that there would be a, it, when money came in these windfalls from contract zoning, that rather than just having one city councilor making sure it got steered toward their favorite project, that maybe it would go into a fund and there would be a more rational approach for how the money would be dispensed. Right. But I think it raises a very interesting question, and it really, let's call it a dilemma, which is that if a windfall comes through as a result of a zoning petition or something else, which and the development primarily affects supposedly negatively the people who are in immediate proximity, I don't think too many people would argue that the people in close proximity should probably get the greater part of the mitigation. Everything, that was the question. So we started seeing, I guess I get, I'm on a mailing list for the Cambridge Community Center, and they were saying like, oh, this is, tell the counselors to not vote for this. And then there was a message from the people from the dance complex, from the community arts center, who were basically saying, well, what about us? You know, we're here too. We have needs. And I'll tell you, the Cambridge Community Center needs some love. That building is got needs work, you know. And you know, it's not like a city building as such, but you know, so maybe there ought to be, if it doesn't come out of this, maybe it should come out of the Community Preservation Act money. But you know, that's all locked in. The affordable housing advocates basically would always want to give the absolute minimum to historic preservation or open space acquisition, because you know, they have one issue and everything else is secondary to them, you know. So I don't know how this gets resolved, and I don't think that there's an absolutely right answer. So they were originally talking, I think Mr. McGovern was talking about that this was going to come to a vote last night. But in the end, I thought to myself, well, the expiration date for the zoning petition is, I think, August 18th, and there will be a city council midsummer meeting on August 4th. So they did kick the can down the road, which I guess probably was the right thing to do. It was interesting that one of our, well, in my view, one of our lesser state representatives named Mr. Connolly, he chimed in on one side of it in a rather emphatic sort of way. And then Marjorie Decker, she came in and took a very different point of view. And they both gave public comment during the city council meeting last night. And when Marjorie speaks, you better listen, because she's a force of nature, I gotta tell you. You know, she's pretty good at it. So I don't know what's right. I'm taking no sides in this, but I do think that if you want to be paid a salary as a city councilor, you can't, you are obliged to take some hard votes and to come up with Solomonic wisdom sometimes for how to resolve issues that may seem difficult to resolve. I don't know that this particular group of people have been particularly great at showing Solomonic wisdom. They tend to be more political, like, you know, who's got the clout, who's going to help me get reelected, who might hurt me in my reelection bids. And I think that that plays a, unfortunately, an outsized role in a lot of the decision making. But you know, hard decisions is what they have to, that's why we pay them. All right, so enough about that. We'll see what happens on August 4th, you know, for that one. I think it's a big deal. Now, the last thing I want to mention about is something I'm sure I mentioned previously, which has to do with this idea about inclusionary zoning. Now, Cambridge adopted inclusionary zoning, you know, for back in, I believe, 1998. It basically said that for all residential development projects of 10 units or more, you would be obliged to provide 15% of that number of housing units, not floor area, but units, to the city, or you know, to be given to the city to house people, sort of essentially subsidized housing. And it was particularly useful for targeting middle-income people, because there were less strings attached, since it was private money built the new housing. It was not the government, it's not government housing as such. And then and it's a gift, or not a gift, but a trade. So okay, if we oblige you to give to take 15% and make it afford so-called affordable housing, you will give you a density bonus that gives you another 15%. So now you got a project that's 130% of what your original proposal was. Anyway, it works out when you do the math, because of the larger denominator, that it ends up as somewhere between 11 to 13% affordable housing requirement for projects of 10 units or more. Okay, so during big, heavy economic times back maybe 2016, 17, 18, I can't remember the exact date now, the city council, in their wisdom, he says in quotes, decided that it should no longer be a 15% plus a density bonus. It should be a flat 20%, meaning after all is said and done, it's essentially an increase from 11 point, approximately 11.6% up to 20% flat out. Net result, and again, people can argue about the validity of these statements, but I think it's pretty demonstrably true, it pretty much destroyed a lot of the development housing development projects over a certain scale. I mean, if you're big enough, then you can do this, right? But for moderate size, residential development projects, they just ended. So, as some people have pointed out, 20% of zero is zero. So maybe there's something needs to be adjusted. So there's a handful of suggestions here. Probably the most substantial certainly the easiest to implement would be to reduce the 20% back, not down to 15, because even 15 was problematic, but to a flat 10%. And all of the people I know who are in the residential development community said, yeah, that's something I think we can work with, and not lose our shirts in the process. So that would require city councilors who like to portray themselves as pro-housing to formally take a vote to reduce the inclusionary requirement from 20 to, let's say, 10%. And they could do it step, depending on, big projects, maybe less so, but smaller projects more so. But in a municipal election year, then you run into a problem because you got a little wussiness here, where nobody wants to be go on record having taking a vote that makes it look like they're somehow voting against affordable housing, even though by reducing the number from the percentage from 20 down, the required percentage down from 20 to 10, you will almost certainly produce more affordable housing than the current system. It's nuts. But this is politics too. So, and as I was saying to somebody last night up at the Sullivan Chamber, I said, they do pay these city councilors a salary, and that does not give them the right to avoid all difficult votes. Sometimes you do have to go on record taking a vote, which on the surface may not be what some people want to hear, but which is still maybe the right thing to do. And I'm not saying it's absolutely the right thing to do, but my instincts, and I'm a little mathematical. My instincts tell me that it probably is the right thing to do, and to do it now, and not to, diddle around from now to the end of the year, or as Mr. Chris Cotter in the housing department says we have to do a study upon a study upon a study in order to do this and that and issue the RFPs and whatever. Honestly, they should have the talent within the community development department in order to basically do these do this math. Because and they should be doing it on an ongoing basis. This notion that you should wait every 5 years. Actually, they didn't even do the Nexus study that was required when they were supposed to do it. So whether you do it in-house or contracted out or whatever, it should have been done some years ago. And they just didn't do it. And I think that's kind of pathetic, actually. And I'm not a person who's comfortable taking a shot at the city because I like to work with the city. I always have. I sort of believe in working cooperatively with the city in most every way. That's why I've served on a lot of boards and commissions for that very reason. But boy, they really screwed up in some of these ones. So anyway, maybe it's time to wind it down. I think I'll probably kind of leave it at that. City Council's off for until August 4th. If you're interested in being a counselor or a school community member, go over into Central Square and pull the papers. So anyway, see you soon on another day on Cambridge Inside Out.